When the alarm went off, Vernon was already awake. Pinned down by a monumental hangover, he lay unmoving in his bed beneath a large skylight, watching the rain, listening to the rain. It had started gently, like the compulsive, irritating tapping of a percussionist's fingertips on any available surface, but had soon crescendoed into an insistent drum roll, with gusts of wind catching the downpour and hurling it at the window by the bucket load. Sunny yesterday, positively tropical tomorrow, but today, the perfect storm. Bloody typical. Everything was a nauseating swirl when Vernon finally succumbed to the demands of his day, dragged himself to the bathroom and leant into the mirror to survey the damage. A portrait of Dorian Gray, painted by Munch. He ran a weary hand over his face, considering the greying stubble. Very rock and roll. The living room, where the quartet had been rehearsing till gone 2 a.m, was a disaster. An overflowing ashtray and a nearly empty bottle of Rioja were perched precariously on the corner of the too-big-for-the-room baby grand, and on the oriental rug, surrounded by four mismatched dining chairs and folding music stands, there were a further three empty bottles lying amid stained wine glasses and carelessly discarded sheet music. Vernon lit a cigarette, looked at his watch, and sighed heavily. The first of his dreaded students would be here soon. Trying to hide the evidence of debauchery, he dumped everything he could in the already overwhelmed kitchenette, stuck a cup of yesterday's coffee in the microwave, and went about gathering up the music. Borodin? Dvorak? Schubert? Beethoven? No. Despite Vernon's protests, his once critically acclaimed string quartet had just given over an entire evening to working up easy listening arrangements for wedding gigs. Bat out of hell, when I'm 64, and something strangely just marked elbow. His cello was out of its coffin, lying on its side by the fireplace, its spike still extended. On the curved hip of the instrument lay the bow, unforgivably left tightly wound. An Aston Martin's worth of kit. Just abandoned. Criminal. Vernon sat down under the weight of his guilt and loosened the bow. He stood the cello up on its spike and turned it, gazing sadly at its beautiful curves. When his parents had died, he'd sold their house to own this rare and wonderful thing. And his wife had left because of it. His hand ran up the smooth as crystal neck, fingers following the spiral of the scroll, always satisfying, and back down. He spun the cello around and surveyed the elegant back with its symmetrical mellow tiger stripes and a sheen born out of 200 years' worth of polishing and loving. He let go of the instrument momentarily, allowing it to balance gracefully like a prima ballerina on its spike, and dropped his hands to its waist so that he could lift it gently and rest his cheek against the silky warm wood. He breathed in the scent of it. Rosin. Linseed oil, sweat, varnish, and the faintest hint of his own aftershave. It was almost unbearable to put it down. But there was the doorbell, and there was the ting of the microwave. He sighed his heaviest sigh of the day so far, laid the cello by its case, and went to open the front door of his grim flat to the equally grim, unenthusiastic face of his student. The child passed by without a word. The kid's mother smiled and waved from her car, but Vernon didn't waste any energy acknowledging her. She was a complete idiot, and Vernon disliked her even more than her pain-in-the-arse son. When Vernon came back from the kitchen with his bitter-as-hell cup of coffee, the kid had taken his miniature cello out, but was clearly more interested in looking through Vernon's collection of 78s than getting down to work. "Done any practice this week?" The boy shrugged. Vernon lit another cigarette. "Why not?"
"I hate the cello."
"So why are we here, then?"
"Mum says it's good for me."
"Does she now? I suppose she thinks it'll get you into a good school.
But music is what it should be about.
Your mum ever taken you to a concert?"
"No." Pity. You should hear an orchestra. 80 people all playing together, communicating with each other, creating something as beautiful and fleeting as a butterfly. It's magical. If you practice hard, one day you'll be able to play in one. That's where it's at. That's where the payoff is. Then you'll look back and you'll thank me for teaching you. The child sat down with his cello and cast an unflinching iron gaze on Vernon.
You'll be dead before I thank you, he said.
Vernon laughed a laugh as black as his coffee. No doubt, he said, thinking as he took a deep drag on his cigarette that this kid was ironically perfect for the job. Fine. I've got to get ready for a gig anyway. Vernon went to his bookcase, pulled out an LP and set the turntable of his old-fashioned record player spinning. This is me, he said wryly, as the prelude of J.S. Bach's first cello suite enveloped the room in velvet. Back when I was a promising young soloist. Enjoy. Six gloriously ungrateful students later, Vernon got into his car. It was still chucking it down, and even more so by the time he was stuck in a mammoth traffic jam on the M25. When he finally pulled into the lane that led to Haldon Manor, he was expecting to see animals walking two by two ahead of him. Instead, a guy in a fluorescent jacket waved him into a field marked Artist's Car Park. Damn it, he sighed. You can't even see the stage from here. For a moment, Vernon rested his head on the steering wheel, gathering the will to face the cross-country trek, hoping against hope that the concert would be cancelled. Who in their right mind would want to sit through anything, let alone the 1812 overture and the best of the last night of the proms in the pouring rain? About 5,000 insane punters, if previous gigs were anything to go by. Bastards. Why couldn't they just stay home and watch Britain's Got Talent like everyone else? The dressing room was as expected. A tent pitched on sodden grass with a warped mirror propped up in a corner and nothing much else bar one broken trestle table. It was going to require an acrobatic act to put on his tail suit and dress shoes without getting his socks wet. What did it matter? They were already soaked. The tea tent was populated by yet-to-become jaded young things, just excited to be playing with the Philharmonic Orchestra. Most of the string section members were on a Far East tour with Vengeroff right now, leaving deputy players to sit in their seats, pretending for a brief while that they were really hitting the big time and working with a major orchestra. Bitter? Vernon? Yes. As he stood there, looking out at the rain, clasping a styrofoam cup of thick orange tea between his icy hands, he thought back to his days at the Royal Academy of Music. Halcyon days, when everyone was hoping to wind up in a great quartet or playing for the London Symphony Orchestra indoors and living in Highgate Village. If someone had shown him a snapshot of this future, a picture of himself standing in a grassy puddle waiting for the rain to abate sufficiently for him to make it onto a leaky, wind-buffeted stage where he would be enslaved to the art of pegging music to the stand, deafened by the amplified brass and expected to freeze his arse off all day for less per hour than his useless cleaner got, well, he'd have put his cello back in its case and done something else with his life. Now, it was too late. He was a prisoner, an addict, held hostage by his love of music, always about to quit, yet holding out for one last fix. Just occasionally, sometimes years apart, it was there. That buzz, that magical moment where every hair on his body swirled to attention and a shudder of pleasure ran down his spine. But mainly it was this. An under-rehearsed nightmare miles from anywhere. Under the deranged baton of some megalomaniac conductor who would actually have to give a verbal one and a two and a one, two, three, four into the Merry Widow waltz, because he didn't know how to give a half-decent upbeat, let alone understand that it was in three. By nightfall, the gentle slopes of Haldon Manor Gardens were a sea of golf umbrellas, under which the audience had been steadily getting pissed since 4 o'clock. It was a concert like any other of its kind. Most of the audience were only there for the chance to wave a flag, sing Land of Hope and Glory, and watch the fireworks at its culmination. It was during Rule Britannia that Vernon suddenly realised he couldn't do this any more. He looked up at the conductor in his sequin tailcoat, then across to the screeching soprano wrapped in a Union Jack. His gaze passed over his colleagues' miserable faces, every last one of them shivering with cold, knowing that they would soon be stuck for an hour behind the leaving audience and wouldn't even have begun to thaw out by the time they'd got home. Then he looked down at his precious cello, its gorgeous grain spotted with raindrops, and felt the tension required in his frozen hand just to keep a hold of the magnificently engineered, perfectly balanced Sartori bow. It was like taking a vintage Ferrari off-road. He tried to remember exactly when it was that he'd last felt one of those magical, hair-raising moments of musical bliss. But he could not. The manager of the orchestra had complained to him as he went on stage about his poorly ironed tails and his bow tie, which was yellowed with age. The word inappropriate had been used. Inappropriate? What the hell was appropriate about being here at all? Oh yes, he could be like the rest, buy a cheap Chinese instrument for these occasions, and just not care. But if he was not here to play music and play it as beautifully as he could, what was the point? And nowadays, what occasion was not like this? When did he, personally, play for an audience who recognised when they were hearing something exquisite? Might he not as well always play on a cheap Chinese knockoff? If his students saw him miming on some pop video, they were impressed. But did they ever come to his recitals? The 1812 Overture. Soon the audience would get the fireworks they'd come for. As Vernon opened the music to its midpoint, he wondered if any of this audience had ever heard the divine opening cello quartet, or even knew that this piece was 20, not 5 minutes long, and belonged at the beginning, not the end of a concert. Around him, his colleagues were putting in their earplugs, in the vain hope of protecting their priceless hearing against the onslaught of cannon fire. As the music built towards its noisy climax, and the audience turned excited eyes to the sky, Vernon stopped playing. "What have we come to?" he whispered to his beloved cello. "What have we come to?" He placed his bow across the music stand, and as the cannons began to fire, he laid his cello tenderly on the floor, then jumped on it.